So, we thought we will talk about India's national security challenges in generic terms, but we already have a concrete example of how sudden geopolitical events can pose a lot of challenge to conventional thinking, and how then you have to think on your feet and adjust according to the situation that is fast changing or evolving. I'm talking about the Ukraine crisis, Russia's invasion of Ukraine. There's no other way to call it, but call it as Russia's invasion of Ukraine. But just to blame Russia for what has happened will also be not just one-sided, but also half the truth. So I want to sort of first recap why this has happened and what we should look for and what are the contours of the crisis really. Where is it right now? Where is it going? I don't need to give you updates because that you're getting them on social media, on television channels. Of course, I hope you're not watching Indian television channels where there are graphic tanks blasting the anchors more than anything else. So don't watch Indian television channels because they're only getting secondhand information. And of course, also take the Western coverage of the war with a pinch of salt, because again, there is a lot of propaganda involved there. This is also part of the perception management, information influence operations, which I separately talk about in quite a few other places in the military. That's because why do I say that? Because all the coverage that we are seeing, perhaps, I don't know, some of you may have some other sources, but of watching the coverage, but you are looking at BBC, CNN, Fox News, DW, France 24, all these are part of the Western alliance and go by what the Western alliance thinks and will direct. So we're not getting too much of the, I don't know, Russia today also is the other side of the story. So there is no real neutral coverage. So you have to really go through the minefield. So that I'm not going to give you the update. But I would say this. Two or three broad points I want to make about the conflict, why it happened, how it happened, and how the West actually misread Putin and has now allowed him to go into Ukraine, invade Ukraine, try to invade Ukraine, I would say. He hasn't been able to invade it fully as it is. But it is certainly more than a local conflict. Let's not kid ourselves by saying that it's between Russia and NATO, Russia and Europe, Russia and US. No, Europe and India will be affected. So would China be, because the consequences of that conflict are far-reaching. They're far-reaching because of certain interconnected points at which all countries converge. Financial system for one, crude oil for another. You have crude oil prices going up because of the tension. And then for us, an additional factor, China, which I will talk about as we go along. So therefore, we cannot ignore, neither China nor India can ignore the consequences of the conflict, which is far away from our borders or from our territory or even from China's territory. This is going to lead to more fractious and antagonistic relations between US and Russia, Russia and the European powers. Also, China and Russia will now get much more closer, which is bad news for India in that sense. So therefore, we have to brace for further turbulence in our national security setup. The India-US relations will also be more tense because remember we are in the midst of taking deliveries of S-400 air defense missiles from Russia, which the Americans have been forever threatening to sanction us, which for taking that delivery or buying those systems, they are best in class. So now the issue here is how will US react? Will it sanction India now? I mean, it will sanction Russia, of course, but will it sanction India also for taking that? So therefore, India is caught between a hard place and a rock, as they say, or between a rock and a hard place, because it has to keep its ties with Russia in mind. They're substantial, they're deep, and they're critical in the defense terms, if not for crude oil. So what India has to do is something that we have to discuss or we need to be aware of. India will have to go by its own interest, as other countries are going by their own national interest. Now, fortunately, in the past 8 years, India under Prime Minister Modi and his team has been moving away from the moralistic stand that India has to take in foreign policy. We have been very pragmatic. We are doing it according to our own interests. Although I must say that even in early 2014, when UPA was in its last leg of power, when Crimea happened, when Russia went and invaded Crimea, similar stand was taken by India of abstaining from the UN Security Council resolution. That time India wasn't on the UN Security Council. But India took a stand that both parties must talk to each other. They must give chance to diplomacy, which is what exactly what India has done even this time. But the language has sharpened, if you noticed. Initially, India said it was a fight between Russia and the NATO group. Then Prime Minister Modi spoke to President Putin. But surprisingly, also spoke to the Ukrainian president. Zelensky had a phone call with Prime Minister Modi, clearly indicating that India is an important player because both countries value India's role and India's standing, which has got credibility, which has got the necessary heft in international relations. And therefore, India has to maneuver around the minefield very deftly. It can only say that we can't settle the dispute, but we can only urge the diplomacy be given a chance because we are interested in the outcome. We are interested in what happens between Russia and Ukraine and not how it happens. Who does that? What are the mediating roles that other countries can play? We're not interested in that. We can play the mediating role, but we also have our limits. The economic sanctions on Russia by the West will consolidate the Sino-Russian axis, which is, as I said at the beginning, is bad news for India. Because if China becomes more aggressive against India, and which is more likely, then Russia will, of course, certainly try and mediate or urge both parties to sit down for talks. But it will also squeeze India on arms supplies, on replenishment of our ammunition. Therefore, ironic that and spares, ammunition and spares, of course, mostly for the Army and the Air Force and the Navy ships that are on order right now. We might have problems. S-400 is from Russia, I remember. But Russia has also supplied S-400s to even China. So Russia is not out of the game as far as India-China-Russia triangle is concerned. But India will have to be very careful in how it allows Russia to come into that conflict with China when it happens, as it happened in 2020. And they were subtle. They didn't say like the Americans or the Europeans to tell us do this and don't do that. But they quietly told both parties to sit down and talk. So I would say that we are an essential partner in diplomacy as far as Russia-Ukraine is concerned. Russia will also be an essential partner for us if China decides to become more belligerent. So therefore, we cannot count out Russia in this. We have our own interest. And therefore, we must go by our own interests. We should not take sides in this conflict. I'm talking about the Indian government's stand or Indian diplomacy because taking sides doesn't help. Taking sides doesn't influence the outcomes. Taking sides for a think tanker, for a professor, for an academic is good. Not for the people who conduct diplomacy, not for the people who take decisions in the highest levels in the government. Now, the conflict itself, per se, why has the conflict occurred? Why has Russia moved into Ukraine, has tried to move into Ukraine? Remember, all sides have their interest in that part of the world. The eastern borders of Ukraine, remember, if you see the map, which I'm sure you have seen, if you haven't, please see. Maps give you the sense of what's happening. And if you look at the eastern borders of Ukraine, they're just 300 kilometers from Moscow. Now, it's like saying that China coming into Jaffna and setting up a base, India shouldn't feel threatened. Or China coming into the core based in Lahore in Pakistan and setting up a base is not threatening to India. So, Russia has been signaling this. Russia has been talking about this for almost 15 years. Remember, Putin has been talking about Russia's sphere of influence and Russia's security threats from NATO and the eastward expansion of NATO. When Russia collapsed in 1989, the number of NATO partners or members of NATO were 16. Today, you have 30 of those countries which are in the immediate vicinity of Russia are members of NATO. And therefore, Russia has legitimate interest in trying to make sure that Ukraine does not go and join NATO or become part of the EU in that sense. Similarly, if Russia was to win and invade and successfully invade Ukraine in the coming week and control Ukraine, then European capitals like Prague, Vienna, Berlin, all of these will feel threatened because Russia is at the doorsteps now. So it works, cuts both ways. If Russia feels threatened by European power, the NATO powers coming into Ukraine or making Ukraine its satellite country or a member of the NATO, similarly, if Russia takes over Ukraine, which is a big country if you see the map, and its western borders are abutting the European heartland in that sense. So therefore, both have legitimate grievances or legitimate reasons for preventing each other from taking over Ukraine. And therefore, this, I would say, the invasion of Ukraine that has happened. So they have, one must underline this fact that all sides have interests. It's not about autocracy versus democracy. It's not about a dictatorship versus thriving European-style democracy, but about interests. How do you protect your borders? How do you make sure that forces inimical to you don't come into your sphere of influence? That's what is driving the current crisis in Ukraine. Similarly, it is not about foreign policy or principles or international relations, theory of international relations, but about hard power. Russia feels that the US, through its NATO allies, is trying to surround Russia from all sides and wants to bottle up Russia as a landlocked country. Remember, if you go back to 8 years ago, Crimea was taken over by Russia, annexed by Russia, for one significant reason, one major reason, and that was the port of Sevastopol, which is the only warm water port in the vicinity. Russia has a huge coastline, certainly a very major coastline, 36,000 kilometers, but it's all in the north. It's 7 to 8 months, it is frozen. It's full of snow and ice. So the ports cannot be used for trade and free flow of energy and trade. So they needed a warm water port, access to the Mediterranean and then further going into Europe and further. So, of course, Turkey has been good to them. It allows the Bosphorus access so far to Russia. But remember, Turkey is a NATO country. It's a NATO member. It can close down Bosphorus anytime it wants. So Russia then gets bottled up. So there are genuine fears in Russia about being constricted, despite being such a large country, into that land borders or the landmass that they own or that they rule over. So therefore, they have done what they have done. Nobody is supporting it or condemning it from India, and rightfully so. The only legitimate way forward is dialogue. Both sides have to look at it as a dialogue. Now, Ukrainians have refused to go for talks to Belarus because Belarus is, of course, Russian stooge in the Russian camp. So they won't go there. But now they have suggested other countries like Latvia or Lithuania or other places where they can hold talks. Now, India, again, a lot of people, a lot of commentary would say India must condemn Russia. India must criticize Russia. Take sides on matter of principle. It is saving democracy. Well, foreign policy is not dictated by principles of democracy or by principles or theory of international relations. It is dictated by pragmatism. It's dictated by a pure national interest. Nation must come first. And that's exactly what India is doing. And not today. I mean, it's nothing unique to this government. Governments in the past have done it. You must have seen on the WhatsApp University forward, which says, why should we support Ukraine? Because it did not support us during the nuclear test in 1998. It allowed a resolution against India on Kashmir and so on and so forth. Do you know that the most vehement opposition to India's nuclear test in 1998 came from Japan? And today, Japan is our closest partner in the Quad, in the Indo-Pacific. So, countries which are pragmatic, which know how international relations work, do not hold these grudges. It's good for WhatsApp groups to rave and rant against Ukraine and saying, just deserts for you. You opposed us on so-and-so on issue. So, now you're getting battered by Russia. Good for you. Well, that's not how it works. I mean, if that was the case, then US and Japan wouldn't be closest of allies, military allies, after the Second World War, because they were fighting against each other. Similar thing can go with the US and Germany. If you look back at history, they were fighting against each other. They were sworn enemies during the World War. But US undertook the reconstruction of Europe, and particularly Germany, under the Marshall Plan. And today, they are part of the NATO. So there are no permanent friends or enemies in international relations, as you must have heard. There are only permanent interests. And India's interest is that we must urge both sides to sit down for talks. And we are interested in the outcome. And the outcome is that Ukraine does not go and join NATO, which satisfies Russia. Russia does not invade Ukraine because it satisfies the NATO countries and America. And we go back to the status quo. That will be the best outcome. Will that happen? I don't know. I'm not a mind reader. I don't know what's happening with Putin or what's happening with Biden. So we'll have to wait and watch on that. So having said that, we continue to take that position. We are interested in the right outcome. Picking sides will not help, is what I wanted to emphasize once again. As for Putin, has he done the right thing? Has he now embarked on a policy, or I would say a project, to re-establish the Russian Empire, as some people want to say? Well, again, too early to say. I think his move stems from that fear that I mentioned at the beginning, that Russia might be surrounded. But in my own view, I think he's overdone the thing. He's overreached himself in doing what he has done. One, because by doing what the aggressive action in Ukraine, he has woken up the slumbering countries like Germany, France, and the other European countries. They are uniting like never before. They have got united in action. They have imposed the expulsion of Russia from the SWIFT system of financial transfers, or interconnected financial dealings. Germany has upended its 70-year-old policy of being on the defensive, or being low on defense budgets, from $50 billion of defense budget for this year in 2021-22. Germany has just announced infusion of $100 billion, or 100 billion euros, I think, in its defense budget, and said that we will spend 2% of our GDP on defense, which is a huge change. It has overturned its policy of not spending on defense. German defense forces had been hollowed out completely in the past few decades, because there was a collective security in the NATO system. So they didn't have their own armed forces strong enough. But they've just completely changed this. They've also reversed their policy of not supplying hardware, military hardware, to anyone, leave alone a European country. They have said they're going to send a consignment of Stinger missiles to the Ukrainians, like the Americans are sending the Javelin missiles, which are anti-tank and anti-aircraft, respectively. So by doing what he has done in Ukraine, Putin has actually woken up the decarcinated NATO countries, or the European countries. They're coming together. They are being re-energized into action. And that's what NATO is being revived. And Russia may pay the price in the long run. Of course, it has $650 billion of foreign exchange reserves. So these sanctions against Lavrov and Putin, which again, I think, is just fake news, and stopping, I would say, Russian planes or Russians from buying property in the UK, is not going to work. Sanctions have their limitations, financial sanctions. So therefore, this is where the consequences of the Russian action is, that the NATO has been revived. Russians, surprisingly, the Russian land forces are not doing too well in trying to capture Ukraine's cities. So Kharkiv, which is the northeastern city, was seen as the easiest target for the Russian land forces and the mechanized forces. But they have faced resistance. From some accounts, they have been ousted from there. Many convoys have been halted. Many Russians have been captured. And I'm still surprised that the Russians are not using air support, close air support, for their land forces. For whatever reasons, I still have to study that. But they have not used it. Maybe that's the second stage of battle. They are now trying to capture all the ingress routes into Ukraine from various directions. And don't count out the Russians, despite their initial clumsiness and lack of thrust they've shown in the first 2 or 3 days, because it's a huge juggernaut military machine. And obviously, it has plans in place. Putin is nobody's fool. Remember, he came out of nowhere to rule Russia for the longest time now, ever since it broke up. So obviously, he has his plans, he has his thinking, and he has his strategy to do what he has done and carry it through. So it's not let's not rule out Russians, but it also shows the old dictum remains valid even today, that amateurs talk about strategies and tactics, professionals talk logistics. Why do I say that? Because without logistics, without the supply chain of fuel, food, water, no troops can advance in any country. Because you need to be self-sufficient. You need to be supplied with the necessary fuel and the armament or replenishment of ammunition and other stuff, which India got it right during the standoff with China. Because India's logistics supply chain performed at the extremely efficient level in Ladakh, despite the severe winter 2 years running, we have actually managed to keep the Chinese at bay, which irritates them no end. They haven't got, if you saw my interview with former National Security Advisor Shiv Shankar Menon, they could not achieve their political aims in Ladakh or their aims that they with which they tried to be aggressive there. And that happened because India's logistics was impeccable. The logistics worked, and then the fighting arm or the combat teams then know how to take on the adversary. In this case, in Russia's case, I think their the logistics hasn't worked as well as they thought it would, or maybe they didn't give it enough thought. And therefore, we have the situation where we are. I think China looks at this situation both as a challenge and as an opportunity. The challenge is that by supporting initially the Russian action or the Russian intention, the Chinese later abstained, like India, from the UN Security Council resolution against Russia. Now, they're very uncomfortable about similar situation occurring in Xinjiang, Tibet, or other parts of China. If people try to get in there by any means, they're very uncomfortable. Number two, the opportunity is that if they do something similar to India, then who supports India in the UN Security Council? Will Russia support us? The Americans will be wary for not supporting them fully against Russia in this case. So it also complicates matters for us vis-a-vis China. Similarly, does China see an opportunity in doing something similar with Taiwan? Perhaps yes. But Taiwan is not Ukraine. Taiwan is not a pushover, because it's got its own Air Force and missile forces, and also security guarantees from Japan, Australia, and US. So therefore, China will be wary. So who is the next target? Maybe India. So we have to be very wary. We have to be very careful in what happens next. One thing is for sure, that this action by the Russians have consolidated the already strong Sino-Russian axis, Sino-Russian pact or partnership. The threat to China is that this has come at a wrong time. They are 6 months away or 8 months away from the National Party Congress in October. And the factions opposing Xi Jinping would now start demanding the kind of explanation that they otherwise wouldn't demand from Xi Jinping on how he deals with the change situation. Xi Jinping doesn't want any disruption in supply chain, any disruption in its energy lines coming from anywhere. And therefore, it's a wrong timing as far as China is concerned. What happens, and final thoughts, what happens if Ukraine falls after all the fighting initial stage? There are two scenarios, envisage. Again, not sure which way it will go. One is like the Russians will get bogged down like the Americans did in Afghanistan with Afghan forces, with the Ukrainian forces fighting from the neighboring countries, Poland and Romania and Hungary, or any of these countries, and prolonged insurrection or urban warfare goes on in Ukraine, which will be tragic. But if Russians take control of Ukraine, it pretty much becomes the Saudi Arabia of the food market. and which none of us seem to give much credence to. But this is how it works. 80% of the world's rapeseed oil comes from Ukraine. 30% of the global wheat exports comes from Ukraine. 20% of the corn export comes from Ukraine. Then aluminium, they are dependent on from Ukraine. So the prices of all these commodities will go up. So Russia becomes the king of commodity market, which we normally don't put much focus on. We talk about crude, we talk about chips, the semiconductor. I mean, I'm talking about the semiconductor chips, all that. But food, if it starts impacting food prices in Europe and starts impacting food prices the world over, when they are the ones who are controlling 20% of the wheat exports and 80% of rapeseed oil, then it will mean that the countries will have to be careful in how they deal with Russia if it takes control of Ukraine. That's a big if. Similarly, gas. Europe is dependent on gas from Russia. How is Russia going to react if it's cornered? Then we'll have to wait and see where does it go. Because the Russians are not dependent on the world's financial system so much. They have 635 billion of foreign exchange reserves, and only 18% of its GDP, they have a national debt, which is one of the lowest in the world. So they are not like other countries. And therefore, the Russians have made Europe dependent on it for gas and electricity. So the harsh truth is, if Russia stops the gas, Europe would spiral into a crisis. Is Europe ready for this kind of a thing? We don't know. So therefore, there are quite a few hidden, I would say, wheels within wheels. And therefore, one has to see it from a very wider perspective, from a macro issue, than what we are seeing in terms of tactical battles, or one city falling to Russians and the other city resisting Russian advances. That's a day-to-day affair. It can change within hours. But the larger perspective here, and my final thought on this is, final sentence on this is, and we are living through history. History is in the making. Nothing after World War II was something similar that we have watched after that. There is a huge geopolitical churn, and we should consider ourselves lucky that we are witnessing history as it is created by, you can say, a megalomaniac like Putin, an insecure leader like Putin, or a master strategist like Putin. And everybody else is reacting to it.